Welcome to Sparking Success with Aaron Opalewski, the podcast where business brilliance meets leadership wisdom. Aaron brings you conversations that spark innovation, cultivate leadership skills, and pave the way for your business success. In each episode, we delve into the dynamic world of business and leadership, exploring strategies, insights, and success stories that fuel your professional journey. Well, hey, everybody, welcome back to Sparking Success. My name is EJ Swanson. I'm joined here with Aaron Opalewski. Aaron, how are you today?
Doing well. How are you, EJ?
I'm feeling great. It's Friday when we're filming. You know, we usually film on a couple of different days throughout the week, either Fridays or Mondays. We either end the week and head out with a bang, or we start the week with a bang with your podcast. And I'm so thankful for that. And today we're going to talk about knowing your numbers or get run over. And I love the title even for this episode. And if you're tuning in for the first time, I would challenge you just to head on back. There's three episodes prior to this. We would love for you to watch those. As you watch those or listen to those, take a minute, like, subscribe, type some questions or comments. We would love to partner alongside of you as Aaron walks us through what success can look like and how we can further spark that in our day-to-day lives. Now, today, Aaron, we're going to talk through a couple of different things. We're going to talk through how we can know our numbers. We're going to talk through gross profit strategy. And we're also going to talk about scaling and making decisions within your numbers. So tell me a little bit about the thought process for this episode, why you feel this is so important to our success.
Well, I think you hear that like phrase or phrases like that a lot, right? Like, oh, you got to know your numbers. You absolutely do, or you'll get run over.
Yeah.
Like our title. And we'll start out kind of in a general sense, and I feel like you see a lot of good stuff and out there on that, and it's like, okay, good theory, makes sense.
Yep.
Well, let's go into more of the tactical stuff of like some things that, in my opinion, are important on how you would actually do that. You know, that's the goal today. To do a little bit of that.
Yeah.
We could talk for 8 hours on this topic. We won't. So anything that we cover, there's much more to unravel within that or other, you know, areas of this.
We're
to it all today.
Yeah, I feel like this could be one of those episodes that we could divide up into 15 different subpoints and just, you know, go. And
we could have a series on this. Maybe we will.
Yeah, maybe we will. You know, and even early on in the company that I run alongside of you, you've taught me a ton about GP and just what that looks like. So, you know, tell us a little bit about the importance of knowing your numbers within your business.
Well, to talk about it at a top level, I think if I can give you just a main reason why you want to know your numbers. I mean, one, if you don't know them, it's really hard to make decisions. But, okay, why is that? Well, if you're making emotional decisions in your business, like anytime you make an emotional decision in your business, you're setting yourself up for failure. It doesn't mean you always will. And it doesn't mean that you take all emotion out of how you go about your day-to-day within the business. But when you're making decisions without data, without the financial acumen, you know, behind it, you're really putting yourself into choppy waters right out of the gate.
Yeah.
And that's a lot of times where on businesses that, you know, either I've owned, you know, as we've grown, or now in that we consult or we look at consulting, a lot of times what you'll see is a lot of emotional-based decision-making instead of data-driven decisions. And so where we try and focus on the consulting side of it is not so much like trying to be like rah-rah, like, oh, you got to know your numbers or this or that. It's like, no, like actual, like, okay, we're going to tell you to be less emotional. Well, how do I do that? You know, but that's at the focal point is if people are going to make emotional decisions within their business, the more they do that, the more likely they're going to create chaos within their business.
Yeah, and chaos is never good in business. Certainly, you want to strive for clarity as much as possible. Yeah. You know, I know over this last season, as you've continued to grow Spark Companies, one of the things that you have done is continue to build out how you get that data. Now, I know that for a lot of business owners, financials, data, metrics, things like that are important. Mm-hmm. But not everybody always knows where to even start with that.
Sure.
Like, where did you find that you started collecting data, or what data do you feel like is important to you in knowing those numbers?
Sure. Well, I think the basics would be you need to know an income statement or a profit and loss statement. Now, you don't have to necessarily do it within your business, and you probably shouldn't unless your background's in accounting, finance, bookkeeping. You probably should. That's something that you should outsource to someone or mm-hmm. bring someone on the team that's an expert of that. Is like that would be probably one of my first five hires that I suggest.
And interesting.
I outsource it pretty much right out of the gate.
Okay.
Because you want good records. But so your income.
Let me clarify real quick. So that would be one of your first five hires would be somebody on.
If I was putting a business together, someone that can make sure that we're maintaining proper sets of books would absolutely be in my first five hires if I was starting with one and growing the company.
And with that, are you suggesting that outsourcing is a good way to do that off the bat?
Before you get to that hire?
Absolutely. Okay, that's
good.
There's
an area that I recommend that. That would be one of the main ones. So you keep good sets of books and you can – also, let's say you don't know an income statement or a profit and loss statement. The other one you need to know is a balance sheet.
Mm-hmm.
I think you need to understand a cash flow summary.
Got it.
It's about as basic as you get as those three.
Yep.
Well, what's some ways to learn it? Well, you go on YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
You could Google it. You could do a lot of that stuff. You could learn on the go. But this is not an area necessarily that I'd recommend. I don't think it's a bad idea to do some research on that stuff, and you can learn a lot that way. But I would quickly insert a professional, and that's an area that I would pay for to help me learn. So you don't want to be learning from your mistakes in this area.
That's good.
But those are the basics, would be those three to me. Other people might feel like there's more to your there is a lot more, right? But where do I start? You want to understand those three, and you want to understand the difference between them.
Yeah. Now you have a finance background.
I do, but it's laughable that has anything to do with my financial acumen as to reading those sheets or anything like that. I think because I had an interest in that.
Yep.
It helped, and I'm much better at that stuff naturally or more gifted in that than I am algebra. Like that is not my jam. But you move over to the accounting side of things. You know, and where I struggled in algebra, I excelled in accounting.
Okay.
You know, so.
Now, when you talk about knowing your numbers,
mm-hmm.
as somebody's either starting off a business, and maybe this has changed over time for you, when I think of knowing numbers, it gives me a bit of anxiety because, I want to be on top of, the books, the P&L, those type of things. But, I definitely need help in that area with other people. How often would you say you're quote unquote knowing your numbers, or are you diving into those numbers? And does it vary from the companies that you run?
Great question. Yes and no. So within our workforce solutions companies, I look at it weekly.
Okay.
That's a lot, and for most people don't. I don't look at the balance sheet weekly,
yep.
But I do look at cash flows, and I do look at the income statements weekly.
Okay.
In all seven of the workforce solutions companies.
Got it.
I was actually doing some of that today.
Yeah.
And then I will take that information, and a lot of times what that's leading to is questions or clarifications that are going back to our controller and our bookkeeper.
Yeah. So within that, the question that popped into my head is, what about that as a successful CEO?
Mm-hmm.
Do you feel like other people need to understand about that rhythm, checking it consistently?
Yeah, so we'll get to that in a minute. But
okay.
I would say if you're asking for a general recommendation, you got to be reviewing those things once a month, in my opinion. If you're not keeping those good records, one, you want to keep consistent records, and two, you want them to be good because you should be – this should – when it's done right, this is how you analyze your business and you understand if what you're doing is working or it isn't working. You know, people that don't do these, you run into a whole multitude of issues if you're not up to date or they're wrong. But, sometimes, when I'm trying to convince, a lot of times the scenario is you got someone that's great in sales and they're not strong in this area. and they want to focus on selling compared to this. And, you know, it's all about getting through to people, right? So, okay, you know, I've been in that exact scenario where I'm the main salesperson in the company and I'm focused on that, right? Well, you can sell better or understanding what's working. Like, you have to make decisions within the business. And so you're going to be able to do a better job of selling, pricing, understanding what project is effective and what project isn't, even if it's just you, you know, right? Mm-hmm. Or it's a couple people. Like, yeah, you have a pretty good feel for your day-to-day, and this really gets more important as you keep growing and to be able to scale. But it's still important at those early stages if you're going to be optimal in how you go about doing some of that stuff. Not knowing your numbers, it could take you 6 months to realize that you're pricing something in a poor manner.
Incorrectly.
Or you've partnered with someone that's not paying you, or there's a multitude of things, right? And it's like a puzzle that you're putting together, and these are all parts of the puzzle. Sales being one of them, and it's the biggest piece. But if you're selling and these other things are out of whack, like we were on a call yesterday, mm-hmm. and you know what I heard in there, we had someone that's like, hey, like, I'm able to get a salesperson to do $1 million in sales, but it's not netting out to any benefit for the company. It's like, okay, well, I would need to learn much more before I give any advice. But it feels like there's an opportunity within like the overall structuring of maybe the compensation, you know, program to figure that out. Well, where do we start with that? We go into the accounting records.
Yeah.
So
now I think that's probably a great segue to set up, you know, gross profit strategy. And I will, like, you know, this is my left hand. I guess I'll just raise my right hand right now and say, when you started talking about GP strategy, you know, I came from the nonprofit sector, so I don't know if the reason we never said GP strategy is because we weren't going for a profit, but I had to do some Googling. I'm just going to say it straight up. And I've obviously along the way done more and more research, spend a whole bunch of time, you know, reading different articles and things like that. Forbes has become my best friend for some of these things. But talk to us more about, you know, gross profit strategy. What is that? Can you give us just a bottom line definition of that for people who maybe they're just starting and, you know, they've seen the success that you've had and they're like, okay, hold on, I need ground floor on this. Yeah.
So the way I try and explain gross profit compared to maybe your sales revenue, and in some businesses they could be one and the same, but you definitely want to know the difference. Like, I'll give you a quick example. Like the mortgage industry, right? Let's use like actual real estate.
Okay.
So you see someone, it's like, oh, you know, I have $10 million in homes sold, mm-hmm. right? Okay. Well, they did $10 million in sales, right? But what is a lot of that? It's pass-through revenue. It's the actual home being sold.
Mm-hmm.
What's most important is what's the gap on what their commission is versus that home being sold.
Right.
And I don't, maybe that's a bad example. Maybe someone will correct me and that's not how revenue is recognized for that. I don't own that type of company.
I'm a consultant for one.
But I'm giving you an example where you have a stretched out number and then the actual margin on that number is quite a bit different.
Yeah.
Right. So I look at your sales revenue as one number. Your gross profit is the number of dollars that you actually have to work with inside of the business. It takes out any of the pass-through type income to operate the business. So that's what you actually have, like, okay, I got this here to pay everybody, to cover my, you know, operating expenses, and, you know, at the end of the day, spit out a net income, hopefully.
Yeah.
Or a net loss, but hopefully a net income.
Why is strategy within that so important? And let me put a caveat within that, because it's not just, and this has been floating around in my head for a few minutes here, it's not just to know your numbers to cover, you know, mm-hmm. you know, CYA at the end of the season with taxes, or, you know, make sure that this is happening.
Sure.
It's actually for growth.
Oh, absolutely.
And a strategy always leads to growth.
And doing it in a non-emotional way. So, so let's get into it. So, okay. So where did this come from for us? Or like, you hear we take that and it's like, oh, like you got to create budgets and stuff. And you can hone down on like a specific budget within your operating expenses for like there's lots more complex ways. Like you can keep doubling, triple, like you could do this about 50 times down.
Right.
More than that. But overall, it's like, okay, for a budget, for like, what's up my budget?
Okay. So, you know, we've talked a bunch in different areas around this, but let's just get into the nitty gritty. Why does a GP strategy matter? Why do folks need to have one?
Well, so, you know, first and foremost, like you got to understand the difference between sales revenue, gross profit. And the way I'll explain it, like if you look at a real estate deal, right? Like, okay, $10 million in homes sold. Right.
Right.
Well, okay, that's cool. That's a good amount.
Yeah.
But, okay, what's the commission on that? Is it 3, 4, 5, 6%? To me, that gap is what they actually have. That's the actual dollars they have to work with in their business. So what is that? If they got 6% commissions on all that, which they probably didn't, but let's just say they did, I believe that's a $600,000 number.
Right.
And it's like, okay, they don't have $10 million to operate their business with. Like, that's the home. They got $600,000 here to operate the business with, and that's a completely different game, right?
Right.
So those are big differences. So your sales revenue is one number, but your gross profit's the actual dollars you have to work with. So, okay, why is that important? You know, well, this is where you start your data sets from. Like you can build a budget from that.
Mm-hmm.
And you can go about 50, 100. You know, you talk to multi-billion dollar companies, you can really nail this down project by project, location by location. But just in its general sense, if I have a GP strategy on overall operating expenses, I have a budget.
Got it.
So let's stick with the same example of, let's say there's $600,000 in gross profit in a business, and they want to run their operating expenses. I'll kind of get into this other part in a minute, but at 20%, let's just say. So that means $120,000 of the generated gross profit should go towards that. Maybe, you know, a lot of businesses operate somewhere between like 5 to 10, 12% at an actual net margin, and that's, you know, pretty good. Unfortunately, a lot are less than that,
right,
or even get into the red, right? But let's just say this one's running on a higher margin. You know, if you can get in the 15 to 30 range, like you're that's a higher profitability type business, and there's some that are above that, right? But let's go with 20.
Okay.
So they got $120,000 in their operating expenses. They got $120,000 in net income. That's 240. So there's 360 left. And let's say that goes to actual payouts to people on the team.
Mm-hmm.
Again, I've never consulted for a business, never had that business. I'm sure I didn't get that specifically right, but I wanted to use an example. Like
just, yeah, that's
kind of
easy,
an
numbers.
Easy example to follow on, like, oh yeah, like when I see that, because you see those numbers marketed.
Oh, definitely.
And I kind of laugh about it always because it's like, okay, there's a little bit of ego within that.
Uh-huh.
It's like, okay, like they want to appear, you know, like bigger.
Huge,
than,
yeah.
Cool. You know, that happens within the staffing business. So let's go there next because we know that well.
Yeah.
Okay, you got your sales revenue numbers. Well, if you're doing a lot of contract style business or like where you employ the person, when you employ the person, what do you need to do? You need to pay them.
Yeah.
That's important. So, okay, within that, if we're billing a client that they're on site for, the part that we're paying that person, right, it's part of the cost of goods sold.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's a pass through part of the revenue.
Right.
So you'll see staffing companies that have, you know, there's some like light industrial staffing companies, $100 million in revenue.
Okay.
It's good business.
Yeah.
Like, absolutely. Do you know? I don't expect you to know. But
I
do you
don't.
Know that a lot of staffing companies that are focused on light industrial at that kind of level, because you got a lot of operating expenses within that, a lot of things that happen within that. And then there's lower markups, which means tighter margins. A lot of those operate not on net income, but on gross profit at like a 14 or 15% gross profit.
Hmm.
So what does that mean? That $100 million staffing company, if they're operating at a 14% gross profit, is that they're $14 million.
Right.
They have $14 million to actually run their business with.
Right.
So, okay. So what happens on that, on the revenue side, is, hey, I'm pretty confident, depending on how they're structured, right? But a lot of those companies like that would have multi-sites, you know, probably across the country. And so they have different leases and sets of people that work there and different, you know, local suppliers in some instances. So you could, but you don't always get as much arbitrage on like volume pricing.
Yeah.
There's a lot of things that ding your margins within that before you even get into their comp and all that kind of stuff, right? But at the end of the day, some of those businesses don't make a profit, right? The good ones, 2-3% on overall revenue.
That's interesting.
You know, which is not, I know some companies, and I'm not saying that that's their numbers. Like I know of companies that beat that.
Yeah.
That's pretty general. Like you could sit down with SIA or there's data out there. Like that would be pretty normal that a fully light industrial staffing company is probably operating at about a 14 to 15% gross profit.
Okay.
So, okay. Nevertheless, it's not 100 million that they have to work with. It's 14 or 15, right? Well, then how do those dollars get allocated, you know, within that are very important. So you got your team, your operating expenses, and then hopefully your net income. You could try and do this off that 100 million, but that's so much pass-through income. You really need to focus on, like, what are the actual dollars that we can use? So that's why I'd recommend going off a gross profit strategy. Hmm. When I see comp plans tied to revenue,
yep,
and they're doing contract staffing, one, I'd advise against it, right? But if it's like, I feel like that's going to be a broken comp plan. It's going to incentivize the wrong things.
Okay.
It should be tied to gross profit. That's just my opinion.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that there's businesses out there that haven't made that work or have that figured out. But for the reasons we just talked about, that's my preference.
It's
how you set your budget. It's how you do things. Then the other, so I make sure I answer your question. The reason you do this is as you're growing, which we'll kind of get into next.
Yeah.
Well, as you're growing, you got to make more decisions. Things get more complex. When you understand what this is, and you can look at, am I in or outside of my percentages? And so as I'm falling outside of my percentages and I understand that, I know what I'm getting off my strategy.
Okay, those are set percentages, correct? That you insert within your GP strategy.
Different for different businesses.
Yeah,
you know, we set them different within different businesses. Like,
okay,
you know, the pizza stores that I'm a part of. I'm not going to get into the specifics, right?
Right.
But in that business, I'm not really the financial guy. I'm the HR talent.
Yep.
You know, I'm not that person, you know, to the business. We have another partner and someone that works, you know, within the business day to day that handles that financial area. Well, we have our, you know, strategy on this, right? And then we actually within that business, and I'm not going to get into it, but we have a delta point where it's like what that delta point is gives us a gap. If we're off on any of these numbers, like by a percent or two, right?
Yep.
It gives us some cushion to still ultimately hit our NI target or our cash flow, you know, target.
Like, yep.
Like, we'll leave it at that for now. I'm not going to get into accounting methods on this one.
No, yeah, I appreciate that.
So does that make sense?
Yeah, it definitely does.
Within the staffing businesses, what was my experience is in how, you know, we started using this and it's been very effective for us as we've scaled, especially in this last hot run over the, you know, 4-year period where we've really expanded quite a bit. Well, our previous two expansions, we weren't doing this, right? And I can only talk from personal experience, but I know this to be true for other business owners too. We had more of like, I'm like, hey, let's get to this number on the bottom line, and then let's be aggressive on growth.
Got it.
And there was a lot of positives to that in the first run of that, and then even in our second run.
Can you talk about those positives for a second?
Well,
like what
we were
overall,
very aggressive.
Okay.
Like as we were beating that number, I was very aggressive on like, let's grow.
Yeah.
What were some of the consequences to that? Were what was happening is, okay, as you grow, things complexify. So if you don't have good systems, processes, if everyone doesn't understand your values, like all these other things outside of your numbers come into play and your warts get exposed.
Yeah.
Right? So you got that going on, right? Well, here's what happens next. sitting up because I get passionate about
like
this.
That.
Here's what happens next is, okay, well, as I'm doing that, what am I doing? I'm adding team member spend. I'm adding operational expenses. And if things are going, you know, well, okay, cool. But then if there's a halt to that or a retraction, which happens at times, like it's been my experience in business, growth doesn't go like that.
Right.
You know, it goes like at least like that. And I think you were reading Ray Dalio Principles.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've seen that graph yet.
But I have.
Loops.
Oh, yeah.
That's been my experience as well. It loops.
Yep.
Guess what happens when you just pick a random number and you're growing your overhead and your team member spend and you hit one of those loops? A press down on everything.
It gets bad quick.
Because if your GP's going down, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you are just picking some random number, well, then you got more overhead on the team. You got more operating expenses. As you get more people and you're growing, more people are going to come and say, we should use this tool. We should use this. And you don't necessarily have a, like, it's just kind of like, yeah, that looks good. Yeah, that, like, it's for us, for me, it was more emotional-based decisions. We're over this number. Go. And there was good things about our ability to scale and add clients and grow at a fast pace and all that. There's good things. It also created pain points in those loops where it's like, shoot, like now this is out of whack. Fortunately, you know, for us, like in our experience, like we've always maintained profitability. We've been able to work out of those mistakes. But even on this next gear that we've taken, you look at all the overhead and expense and how we've done that, it's more designed out now.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe built to last. And
yeah.
I'm glad we've evolved that way. But what happens is we use a report card, a monthly report card that tracks 14 different key metrics within our workforce solutions companies. And for a couple of them, we don't use two or three, but there's 14 of them
right. Generally.
And that's what it is. It's a report card. It's like a gauge check on how things are going. And if we're outside the lines or inside the lines of those 14, well, everything of those 14 checkpoints lead back to three things: the team member spend, the operating expense, and the net income.
Okay.
And each year we set percentages on that. It
Got
does
it.
Change, right? We might go through a season of scaling and I say, you know, EJ, look, we're going to make all these, we're going to redeploy the net income coming in
right
into this growth. And here's how we're going to do it. You know, we're going to add a new location. We're putting $500,000 in or a million, or we're going to do this, or this, or we're going to go hire people with experience. Like this is something like we mostly hire people from the ground up, and we believe in that. Right now in this market, because not everyone does this type of stuff, there's really good talent out there to talk to.
Okay.
We're open. You've seen in our last 6-7 hires, we've kind of balanced out and hired a couple people with experience. Well, they're not hired at an entry-level pay necessarily. Or if to not compromise comp plans, we do things like floors. It's another conversation for another day.
Mm-hmm.
But all this stuff is more of a an expense outlay. You know, and we call it an investment. We look at it as it is an investment.
Right, yeah.
But still more of an outlay. So if I know the plan is to be more aggressive on that, and specifically like if we were going to open a new hub,
mm-hmm.
or we're going to say, hey, we're going to start a new business unit, and we're going to do it. We're going to roll some of this stuff in, but we want to, I laugh at this because I don't like hiring ahead a ton, but there's scenarios like if we're going to go build out something in Texas, we got to do some stuff with that. Hopefully
right.
we would be following clients or something like that, but there's going to be, unless we relocate people, we're going to be adding new people to that, right? Well, in that instance, we might up the team member spend and lower the net income. And we also know that, okay, when they come here, they're going to need tools. They're going to need maybe a place to work, maybe not with the way we're doing things, like because we have some remote team members.
Yep.
Although we like or work from anywhere team members, but we like mainly when people are physically there. We're in a people business. But we have both.
Yeah.
Well, you're going to spend more money on tools no matter what, too. So all that's got to be adjusted for that.
Within that scale.
Yeah. And yeah. So, okay, sometimes, specifically if you're growing real fast, you might make those decisions within a year. you might have an opportunity that comes up where you want to break it.
So do you, is that you saying, Aaron, that sometimes it's not a, let's just say your fiscal year is, you know, Jan 1 to Jan 1, mm-hmm. that you would adjust your GP strategy mid-year?
I probably wouldn't adjust it mid-year. I would know when I'm breaking it and why.
That's good.
If I'm going to break it, I'm going to know why. Let me give you an example.
Yeah.
We broke it in 2022.
Okay.
We didn't hit it on the head. We end up spending, and usually this is how it goes, very disciplined the last 3-4 years on the operational expense. We've reached our budget the last 3 years, and we're going to figure out how to do that again this year, is my opinion. Prior to that, we either didn't measure it, or now we go back and look at it, and it's like, oh, man, that we weren't even close. And it's because we weren't doing this.
Okay.
And that's the main thing. We've got better, right? But part of what's got us better is being more disciplined in doing this stuff. So we put that in place. Okay. Well, in 2022, where we were over was our team member spend. And generally, if we're going to be over, that's where we're over, because we like to, like, we're recruiting. You know, we do workforce solutions. We recruit people. Our whole mantra and purpose as a company is to help people grow.
Right.
And we're definitely, like, as things are working, you know, we're aggressive on that. And even with all the technology and stuff like that, which we're open to technology.
Yeah, we're embracing it. Yeah.
But, like, we're still people-centric.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So we have things called igniters. Like, that's our big objective for the year.
Yep.
And so in 22, once it was clear that we were crossing that igniter, the GP strategy is a vehicle to get to that igniter and to be disciplined if we're not hitting the mark, because when we're disciplined on that, we're still going to be doing something that builds for the long term in a successful way. Well, as we're crossing that objective for the year, it's not about squeezing every dollar down to that net income line as possible. We want to make good long-term decisions for the business. We just don't want to say that all the time.
Right.
And have,
well, it, does I, it become I want to an make, excuse?
I want to make good culture decisions. I want to make good decisions for the long term. And, well, you just lost money.
Yeah.
You know, you just took your profitability from 20% on your GP down to 2.
Right.
Now, what are you going to do? How are you going to give people raises? How are you going to hire more people?
Mm-hmm.
How are you going to promote anybody? Oh, you're going to go to a loss? Okay. Guess what? When you do all those things, what's also going to happen? You're going to spend more money on all those things. Things are going to complexify. It's not going to get easier to turn that around, actually get harder. Well, guess what? A lot easier to do when you're at proper or closer to proper points on where you want to be and not way off track.
Hmm.
So I agree with you should do all these things, right? But, like, if it's, you know, if we set a one of our GP strategies, you know, if we set the number at, you know, call it 40%, 35%, it doesn't really matter, just any number.
Right.
We get over our objective for the year, and we're out ahead, you know, moving down towards the big mission, and we're out ahead of it, right? Well, if we're doing that, we're probably at that point, I know we're seeing opportunities where we could advance, grow. Like, we got momentum, we got a rhythm. Well, am I worried about crossing over that 40%? Or, hey, if we come in at 38, but we produce more GP, and at 38, it's a bigger number at the end of the day, then it would be at 40 by not doing those things. Well, that's a slam dunk all day, number one. Even if it didn't net out to as much money, but we crossed that and we still did, you know, really well. And we felt like it set us up for success to service clients better, whatever. Like, once we're over that, like, if we fall off that a little bit, like, that, and like, that's when I want, like, it's not that I don't care. It's that I'm willing to do that. Cause now we can push the pace.
Got it.
Cause we have the momentum. I would suggest when we don't have the momentum, it's not necessarily the time to push the pace. It's more a time to calm, look, assess, check all the gauges, and understand what's not operating right and go fix it before we complicate things more.
And you mentioned most of the time when things aren't operating right, you're high on your people number. Mm-hmm. Is that correct?
When things are operating right?
No, when your number is skewed, is it usually tied to people, or does it depend on the business?
I think it goes both ways, because we're heavier on that, right? So if we do fall off that a little bit, like, so, okay, what would happen is, so let's say that we follow that play, right? So we get up above our objective, we spend a little bit more on team members than what was allocated. You know, we invest a little bit more that way. We get into the next year, we set our numbers, and then we're like missing some of those targets, right? Well, okay, what that may or may, it depends how far we reach that number and how far we might be off that number. But like, let's say we actually did one of those loops and say we retracted down a little bit. Well, now that overspend in that area, let's say we wanted it at, you know, 50 and we were at 51. Well, if we loop down on that GP and we were already at 51 at that GP, well, now you're getting that pressure. I mean, it could go anywhere, right? Depends how deep that loop is. But, okay, you might go to 52, 53, 50. Like, you could go wherever. You know,
yeah.
I see businesses that we do this with, like, they get on a hot – what happens is you get on a hot streak, you get overly confident, just like people get, like, too timid when things aren't going right. And it's more because you don't know what to do. Well, you put some of these tools into place – you can catch stuff sooner. You know how to fix it better. You can just diagnose stuff better. Well, okay, if I'm running hot, you know, I've seen businesses that go all the way up to like they're spending over 100% of their GP because they were spending too much altogether. They don't really realize this. And the bigger the business, the more you don't have a structure like this in place. Or some, these are governors on how to move forward and scale.
Okay, I got that.
Well, as things pivot in business, and like the more out of whack and the bigger that number is, the more aggressive that percentage, you see things balloon on people quite a bit.
What, within this, and I feel like, I mean, my brain is spinning right now. I'm just going to be honest. It's a good spin. This is exactly what I feel like people need to hear. It's exactly what I need to hear as I'm, learning more about this and understanding, the different business principles that I want to learn from you in that, success aspect. What was the biggest obstacle you had to overcome within, knowing your numbers overall? Like if you would say, EJ, this is definitely where I got run over.
Yeah, it's easy. It was actually becoming a student of what we do and how to be an executive, how to run a company compared to just being someone that's good in sales in the profession that I chose and going out and starting something and say, let's just grow.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. And that was the transition that really turned that.
That's been the transition as I see it so far. Maybe I look at it differently down the road.
Right.
But I think this is a point in time where it's like, hey, when you stopped kind of doing what you thought you knew, basically where, okay, you're a salesperson here and this is what you knew and this is what you did. And a lot of that was good, right? But there's a difference between being good in sales and actually operating the business well. I'll make the argument that you don't really need to worry about that till you're over $3 million in gross profit. Just go be the best salesperson in your company. But I will tell you, once you're over that $3 million marker, now you have to start to build a team. Again, gross profit, not revenue. Once you're over that, you have to start to really build a team. A really good salesperson can just put that on its back all the way to $3 million. And I think that crosses over a lot of, not every business, but a lot of different style businesses. But you try and go from 3 to 10, and you can't do it that way. You're going to have to build a team in almost every instance, in my opinion. Maybe someone will tell me there's new technologies and all this stuff that like, oh, I'm going to do it like – hey, that may assist you. I still don't believe you're going to be able to do it without building a team and growing some leadership skills and some acumen on some of the stuff that we're talking about.
Yeah, that's great wisdom.
And if you make it over those things because you're so great, your product's so great, or you're so great in sales, your service, okay. I've never seen that. I tout us to be really good at what we do.
Yeah.
We were not able to make that jump until some of these things were implemented. And I've not looked at the business yet, and I've looked at hundreds on the financials that I haven't seen that yet. You see infrastructure, you see leadership, you see you see these things that you see, knowing them, they know the numbers and they make decisions that
way. There's an indicator there that you've seen a pattern of.
But I will tell you, the business that does do that right and just through sheer will and doesn't understand this, they're set, like, the higher you go on that, I think the worse the fall off, you know, potentially.
Got
so
it.
I'm sure there's some scenario. I know for a fact there's scenarios where some version of this happens, and you know, it could be, we'll save it for another day, but like, you get outside of your skis and you get ahead of yourself, and you know, the farther you get outside of your skis and the more skill there is to that, right, the more that the fall can hurt.
That's good. So I think that's a great place for us to at least land the plane today. Is there anything else within this you wanted to add before we wrap up?
Yeah, just, I mean, to leave it on a positive, like, my opinion is this is how you scale. You put stuff like this together. You look at this monthly, like our report. We look at, but I'm looking at financials weekly, right? But I look at these report cards monthly, and I'm understanding that. And then I'm going to talk to all our different leaders about the stuff, asking questions. You know, we go over this, you know, with our executive team and teach this to them too. We want them to learn. All our operators are either using this already or we're starting to introduce it to them.
Right.
Which is another thing on uniformity, right?
We can talk
about that later. But that's, I would say this is how you do it, in my opinion. This is what's worked the best for us to continue scaling past certain points, is having these structures in place to make data-driven decisions.
Yeah, that's great. Know your numbers or get kicked.
Get run over.
You get kicked in the backside all day on it. Well, Aaron, again, another great episode, just learning from you. And thanks for sharing that with each of our listeners. If you want to learn more about GP or maybe within your business, this is somewhere you're struggling, reach out to us. We'd love to help see how we can help, maybe answer a question or two for you. And as you do that, make sure you go ahead and like this channel. Make sure you subscribe. I know we say it a whole bunch, but it's important to us because we want to keep putting out great content for you so that you can continue to spark success in your day-to-day life. Aaron, thanks again. I hope you guys have a great day.
Thanks, CJ.
Yep.
Have a good day.